His eyes grow heavy. The strain of talking has worn him out. You're delirious, I reply. But while Thomas's touch now repulses me, I feel no revulsion towards Day. I should, but the feeling just doesn't come. A lie like that is treason against the Republic. Besides, why would Congress authorize such a thing? Day doesn't take his eyes off me, and just when I think he's lost the strength to respond, his voice comes out sounding even more insistent. Think about it this way. How do they know what vaccines to give you every year? They always work. Don't you find it strange that they can make vaccines that match the new plague that's popped up? How can they predict which vaccine they'll need? I sit back on my heels. I've never questioned the annual vaccinations we're required to have. Never had any reason to doubt them. And why should I? My father used to work behind those double doors, working hard to find new ways to combat the plague. No, I can't listen to this anymore. I pluck my cape from the ground and tuck it under my arm.
One more thing,
Day whispers as I stand. I glance down at him. His eyes burn right into me.
You think we go to labor camps if we fail? June, the only labor camps are the morgues in the hospital basement.
I don't dare linger. Instead, I walk away from the platform, away from Day. But my heart pounds against my chest. The soldiers waiting by the elevator stand even straighter as I approach. I arrange my face in an expression of pure irritation. Unchain him, I order one of the soldiers. Take him down to the hospital wing and get that knee of his fixed. Give him some food and water. He won't last the night otherwise. The soldier salutes me, but I don't bother to look at him before shutting the elevator door.
Day. I have nightmares again. This time they're of Tess. I'm running in the streets of Lake. Somewhere ahead of me, Tess is running too, but she doesn't know where I am. She turns left and right, desperate to see my face. But all she finds are strangers and street police and soldiers. I call out for her, but my legs can barely move as if I'm wading through a thick sludge. Tess! I shout. I'm here! I'm right behind you! She can't hear me. I look on helplessly as she runs right into a soldier, and when she tries to turn away from him, he grabs her and throws her to the ground. I scream something. The soldier lifts his gun and points it at Tess. Then I see that it's not Tess, but my mother who lies in a puddle of blood. I try to run to her, but instead I stay hidden behind a chimney on a roof, crouched like a coward. It's my fault she's dead. Then suddenly I'm back in the hospital lab again, and the doctors and nurses are standing over me. I squint in the blinding light. Pain shoots through my leg. They're cutting open my knee again, pulling back my flesh to reveal the bones underneath, scraping at it with their scalpels. I arch my back and scream. One of the nurses tries to hold me down. My flailing arm knocks over a tray somewhere. Hold still! Damn it, boy, I'm not going to hurt you! It takes me a minute to wake up. The blurry hospital scene shifts, and I realize I'm staring up at a similar fluorescent light and that a doctor is hovering over me. He wears goggles and a face mask. I give a shout and try to bolt upright, but I'm tied to an operating table by a pair of belts. The doctor sighs and slides his face mask down. Look at me, bandaging up a criminal like you when I could be helping soldiers from the war front. I look around, confused. Guards line the walls of this hospital room. A nurse is cleaning bloody equipment at the sink. Where am I? The doctor gives me an impatient look. You're in Batala Hall's hospital wing. Agent of Paris ordered me to fix up your leg. Apparently we're not allowed to let you die before your formal execution. I lift my head as far as I can and look down at my leg. Clean bandages cover up the wound. When I try to move the leg a little, I notice with surprise that the pain is far less than before. I glance at the doctor. What did you do? He only shrugs, then peels off his gloves and starts washing his hands at one of the sinks. Patch things up a bit. You'll be able to stand for your execution. He pauses. Don't know if that's what you wanted to hear. I slump back down onto the gurney and close my eyes. The diminished pain in my leg is such a relief that I try to savor it. But pieces of my nightmare still linger in my mind, too fresh to put away. Where is Tess now? Can she make it without someone there to watch her back? She's nearsighted. Who will help her when she can't make out the shadows at night? As for my mother, I'm not strong enough to think about her right now. Someone raps loudly on the door. Open up! A man calls out. Commander Jameson's here to see the prisoner. The prisoner. I smile at that. The soldiers don't even like calling me by my name. The guards in the room barely have time to unlock the door and move out of the way before Commander Jameson bursts in, clearly annoyed. She snaps her fingers. Get this boy off the gurney and put him in some chains! She barks. Then she shoves one finger into my chest. You! You're just a kid! You never even went to college! You failed your trial! How were you ever able to outsmart soldiers on the streets? How do you cause so much trouble? She bares her teeth at me. I knew you'd be a bigger nuisance than you're worth. You have a knack for wasting my soldiers' time, not to mention the soldiers of several other commanders. I have to grit my teeth to keep from shouting back at her. Soldiers hurry over to me and start undoing the gurney's belts. Beside me, the doctor bows his head. If you don't mind, Commander, he says. Has something happened? What's going on? Commander Jameson fixes her furious gaze on him. He shrinks away. Protesters in front of Batala Hall, she snaps. They're attacking the street police. The soldiers pull me off the gurney and onto my feet. I wince as my weight transfers onto my bad leg. Protesters? Yes. Rioters. Commander Jameson grabs my face. My own soldiers had to be called in to help, which means my schedule is entirely disrupted. I've already had one of my best men sent in here with lacerations on his face. Filthy cons like you don't know how to treat our military boys. She shoves my face away in disgust and turns her back on me. Take him away, she calls out to the soldiers holding me. Be quick about it. We exit the hospital room. Soldiers rush back and forth in the hallway. Commander Jameson keeps pressing a hand against her ear, listening intently, then shouting orders. As I'm dragged toward the elevators, I see several large monitors, something I pause to admire for a second as I've never seen them in Lake Sector, broadcasting exactly what Commander Jameson just told us. I can't hear the voiceover, but the text headlines are unmistakable. Disturbance outside Batala Hall. Units responding. Await further orders. This isn't a public broadcast, I realize. The video shows the square in front of Batala Hall packed with several hundred people. I pick out the line of black-clad soldiers struggling to contain the crowd near the front. Other soldiers run along rooftops and ledges, hurrying into position with their rifles. I get a good look at some of the protesters as we pass the last monitor, the ones clustered together under the streetlights. Some of them have painted a blood-red streak into their hair. Then we arrive at the elevators, and the soldiers shove me inside. They're protesting because of me. The thought fills me with excitement and dread. No way will the military let this slide. They'll seal off the poor sectors entirely and arrest every last rioter in the square. Or they'll kill them.
June. When I was young, Mateus was sometimes called away to deal with minor rebellions, and afterward he'd tell me about them. The story was always the same. A dozen or so poor folk, usually teens, sometimes older, causing trouble in one of the sectors, angry about the plague quarantines or taxes. Several dust bombs later, they were all arrested and taken to court. But I've never seen a riot like this one, with hundreds of people risking their lives. Nothing even close to this. What's wrong with these people? I ask Thomas. They've lost their minds. We're standing on the raised platform outside Batala Hall, with his entire patrol facing the crowd in front of us, while another of Commander Jameson's patrols is pushing people back with shields and batons. Earlier, I'd peeked in on Day as the doctor operated on his leg. I wonder if he's awake and seeing this chaos on the hall monitors. I hope not. No need for him to see what he started. The thought of him, and his accusation against the Republic, that the Republic creates the plagues, kills kids who fail the trial, fills me with rage. I pull my gun out of its holster. Might as well have it ready. Ever seen something like this? I ask, trying to keep my voice even. Thomas shakes his head. Only once, a long time ago. Some of his dark hair falls across his face. It's not combed back as nicely as usual. He must have been out in the crowds earlier. One hand lingers on the gun strapped to his belt, while the other rests on a rifle slung around his shoulder. He doesn't look at me. He hasn't looked at me straight on since he tried kissing me last night in the hall. A bunch of fools, he replies. If they don't back down soon, the commanders will make them regret it. I glance up to see several commanders standing on one of Batala Hall's balconies. It's too dark now to be sure, but I don't think Commander Jameson is with them. I know she's giving orders through her mouthpiece, though, because Thomas listens intently with one hand pressed against his ear. But whatever she's saying is only for Thomas, and I have no idea what she's telling him. The crowd below us continues to push. I can tell from their clothes, torn shirts and trousers, mismatched shoes filled with holes, that almost all of them are from the poor sectors near the lake. Secretly, I will them to disperse. Get out of here before things get worse. Thomas leans over to me and nods towards the center of the crowd. See that pitiful bunch? I'd already noticed what he's pointing out, but I still follow his gaze politely. A group of protesters have streaked their hair scarlet, imitating the blood-stained lock Day had when he stood out here for his sentencing. A poor choice for a hero, Thomas goes on. Day will be dead in less than a week. I nod once, but say nothing. A few screams echo from the crowd. One patrol has made its way around to the back of the square, and now they have the crowd boxed in, pushing people in towards the square's center. I frown. This isn't protocol for handling an unruly mob. In school, we were taught that dust bombs, or tear gas, is more than enough to do the job, but there's no sign of that. None of the soldiers wear gas masks. And now, yet another patrol has started chasing away the stragglers gathered outside the square, where the streets are too chaotic and narrow to protest properly. What's Commander Jameson telling you? I ask Thomas. Thomas's dark hair falls around his eyes and covers his expression. She says to stay put and wait for her command. We don't do anything for a good half hour. I keep one hand in my pocket, absently rubbing Day's pendant. Somehow the crowd reminds me of Skiz. There's probably even some of the same people. That's when I see the soldiers running along the tops of the square's buildings. Some hurry along ledges, while others are gathered in a straight line across the roofs. Odd. Soldiers usually have black tassels and a single row of silver buttons on their jackets. Their arm insignias are navy blue or red or silver or gold. But these soldiers have no buttons on their jackets. Instead, a white stripe runs diagonally across their chest and their armbands are gray. It takes me another second to realize who they are. Thomas. I tap him and point up to the roofs. Executioners. No surprise on his face, no emotion in his eyes. He clears his throat. So they are. What are they doing? My voice rises. I glance to the protesters in the square, then back up to the roofs. None of the soldiers have dust bombs or tear gas. Instead, each one has a gun slung around his shoulder. They're not dispersing them, Thomas. They're trapping them in. Thomas gives me a stern look. Hold steady, June. Pay attention to the crowd. As my eyes stay turned up toward the roofs, I notice Commander Jameson step out onto the top of Batala Hall, flanked by soldiers. She speaks into her mouthpiece. Several seconds pass. A terrible feeling builds up in my chest. I know where this is going. Thomas suddenly murmurs something into his mic, a response to a command. I glance at him. He catches my gaze for a second, and then he looks towards the rest of the patrol standing on the platform with us.
Fire at will, he shouts.
Thomas! I want to say more, but at that instant, shots ring out from both the roofs and the platform. I lunge forward. I don't know what I plan to do, wave my arms in front of the soldiers, but Thomas grabs my shoulder before I can step forward.
Stay back, June.
Tell your men to stand down, I shout, scrambling out of his grasp. Tell them. That's when Thomas throws me to the ground so hard that I feel the wound in my side break open.
Damn it, June, he says. Stay back.
The ground's surprisingly cold. I crouch there, for once at a loss, unable to move. I don't really understand what just happened. The skin around my wound burns. Bullets rain down on the square. People in the crowd collapse like levees in a flood. Thomas, stop. Please stop. I want to get up and scream in his face to hurt him somehow. Mateus would kill you for this, Thomas, if he were alive. But instead I cover my ears. The gunshots are deafening. The gunfire lasts only a minute, if that, but it seems like forever. Thomas finally shouts an order to cease fire, and those in the crowd who haven't been shot fall to their knees and throw their hands up over their heads. Soldiers rush to them, cuffing their arms behind their backs, forcing them together into clusters. I push myself up onto my knees, my ears still ring from the gunfire. I scan the scene of blood and bodies and prisoners. There are 97, 98 dead. No, at least 120. Hundreds more are in custody. I can't even concentrate enough to count them. Thomas glances at me before stepping off the platform. His face is grave, even guilty, but I know with a sinking feeling that he feels guilty only for throwing me to the ground. Not for this massacre he's leaving behind. He heads back towards Batala Hall with several soldiers. I turn my face away so I don't have to watch him.
Day. We ride up several floors until I hear the elevator's chains come to a scraping halt. Two soldiers drag me out into a familiar hallway. They're returning me to my cell, I guess. At least for now. For the first time since waking up on the gurney, I realize I'm exhausted and slump my head against my chest. The doctor must have injected me with something to keep me from flailing around too much during the knee operation. Everything around me looks blurred at the edges, as if I'm sprinting. Then the soldiers come to a sudden stop halfway down the corridor, a good distance away from my cell. I look up in mild surprise. We stand outside one of the rooms I'd noticed earlier. The ones with the clear glass windows. Interrogation chambers. So, they want more information before they execute me. Static, then a voice comes through one of the soldier's earpieces. The soldier nods. Let's take him in, he says. Captain says he'll arrive shortly. I stand inside, waiting as the minutes tick by. Guards with blank faces stand at the door, while two others hold my shackled arms. I know this room is supposed to be more or less soundproof, but I swear I hear the sound of guns and the vibrations of distant screams. My heart pounds. The troops must be firing on the crowd in the square. Are they dying because of me? More time passes. I wait. My eyelids grow heavy. I want nothing more than to curl into a ball in the corner of my cell and sleep. Finally, I hear footsteps approaching. The door swings open to reveal a young man dressed in black, with dark hair that falls over his eyes. Silver epaulettes sit on each shoulder. The other soldiers click their heels together. The man waves them off. Now I recognize him. This is the captain who shot my mother. June had mentioned him before. Thomas. Commander Jameson must have sent him. Mr. Wing, he says. He approaches me and crosses his arms. What a pleasure to formally meet you. I was beginning to worry that I'd never get the chance. I will myself to stay silent. He looks uncomfortable being in the same room as me, and his expression says that he really hates me. My commander wants me to ask you some standard procedural questions before your execution date. We'll try to keep it cordial, although of course we started off on the wrong foot. I can't help choking out a laugh. Really? You think so? Thomas doesn't reply, but I see him swallow hard in an effort not to react. He reaches into his cloak and pulls out a small gray remote. He points it at the room's blank wall. A projection comes up. Some police report, with pictures of a person I don't recognize. I'm going to show you a series of photos, Mr. Wing, he says. The people you'll see are suspected of Patriot involvement. The Patriots had tried in vain to recruit me. Cryptic notes scrawled on alley walls above where I slept. An escort on a street corner who slipped me a note. A small parcel of money with a proposition. After ignoring their offers for a while, I stopped hearing from them. I've never worked with the Patriots, I snap. If I ever kill, I'll do it on my own terms. You may claim no affiliation with them, but perhaps some have crossed your path, and perhaps you'd like to help us find them. Oh, sure. You killed my mother. You can imagine I'm dying to help you out. Thomas manages to ignore me again. He glances at the first photo projected on the wall. Know this person? I shake my head. Never seen him before. Thomas clicks the remote. Another photo pops up. How about this one? Nope. Another photo. How about this? Nope. Yet another stranger pops up on the wall. Seen this girl before? Never seen her in my life. More unfamiliar faces. Thomas goes through them without blinking an eye or questioning my responses. What a stupid puppet of the state. I watch him as we continue, wishing I weren't chained so I could beat this man to the ground. More photos, more strange faces. Thomas doesn't question a single one of my terse responses. In fact, it seems like he can't wait to get out of this room and far away from me. Then a photo pops up of someone I do recognize. The blurry image shows a girl with long hair, longer than the bobbed cut I remember. No Vine tattoo yet. Apparently, Kaede is a Patriot. I don't dare let the recognition show on my face. Look, I say, if I knew any of these people, do you really think I'd tell you? Thomas is trying so hard to hold his composure. That will be all, Mr. Wing. Oh, come on. That's not all. I can tell you'd give anything to take a swing at me. So do it. I dare you. His eyes have taken on a furious glow, but he still holds back. My orders were to ask you a series of questions, he says tightly. That's it. We're done here. Why? You afraid of me or something? Only brave enough to shoot people's mothers?